The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Transmission of the Light, the 32nd Zen ancestor, Daozhen. Daozhen said to the Zen master, Singsan, I beg your compassion. Please give me a way of liberation. Singsan said, who is binding you? Daozhen said, no one is binding me. Singsan said, then why seek liberation? At these words, Daozhen was enlightened. In Kazan's verse, when mind is empty, pure knowledge has no right or wrong. Here, I don't know what there is to bind or free. Even if you distinguish the elements of body and mind, seeing, hearing, sound, and form are ultimately not another. So this collection is sort of presenting the Zen ancestors, beginning with the Buddha and then down to Ejo, Dogen's, one of Dogen's successors. And so Daozhen, this is very early in the Chan tradition, so Bodhidharma, Hueka, Sengsan, who wrote The Faith Mind, and Daozhen, so the fourth Chinese ancestor, so late 600s, early, late 500s, early 600s, so very early. And, you know, all of the teachings that come down to us, the records of different masters and going back to the sutras of the Buddha, you know, with the distance of time and just seeing things in print and kind of getting so accustomed to that, you know, we can know that this comes down to us through people, practitioners in every generation, beginning with the Buddha. But to really think about that, you know, how here we are, sitting Sesshin, getting ready to do Ango. We have our own Buddhist practice, our own meditation practice. We study these teachings. And that's been happening for all of these centuries. Just people, human beings, living in their own time, in their own iteration of samsara, and thinking, is this it? Seeking, looking for some sanity, some sense of how to go about it a different way. I was reading an early, one of the original sutras, earlier, Nanda, not Ananda, but Nanda, who was a cowherd. He tended somebody else's cows. And the Buddha was once with some of his disciples teaching. And Nanda, with his cows, was sort of on the periphery, just listening. And he was so taken by the Buddha's teaching that once the Buddha finished, he said, I hear your teachings. I want to enter the way. Please ordain me right now. And he said, cowherd, take your cows and give them back to the owner. And Nanda said, they'll find their own way. They'll figure it out. They'll get home. He said, no, take them back, give them to their owner, and then come back. And that's what he did. He took them back, came back and was ordained and went on to become one of the Buddha's realized disciples. And I thought it was such an interesting, you know, the Buddha said, take care of this, finish this before you begin something. But to think of just wandering around, he was at work, right? Nanda was just at work. He's just out tending the cows. He didn't wake up planning to be a monk. He just overheard the Buddha. So you're just wandering around and you bump into the Buddha. That happened back then. So Daojin comes to Sengsan and says, I beg your compassion, please give me a way of liberation. I seek enlightenment, I seek release. And students, practitioners, I think, can be shy about being so forthright, as though it's presumptuous or arrogant or conceited. But to want to seek freedom from presumption and arrogance and conceit, is that egoistic? It's easy to feel like it's unrealistic, out of reach, only for the few. But the Buddha didn't teach that way. He taught everyone as though who came to him and asked for the Dharma, so they were asking because they were capable, they were had the capacity not just to hear and not just to put into practice, but to realize themselves. And so walking this Eightfold Path, this path of liberation, of non-attachment, of compassion, loving kindness, every step we take, every day of honest practice, is walking that path, and in some way, without measure, we come closer. So we shouldn't be afraid to aspire, to speak those words. If you feel shy, do it in the privacy of your own home to begin. Do it at your altar. As I enter into this day, as a practice of practitioner of the Dharma, may I awaken my mind, may I realize enlightenment. Get used to that. But of course, that presupposes seeking that, wanting that, wanting to practice, wanting to engage in a path, to be liberated, as Daojin says. But liberated from what? Well, Daojin says, I am bound, please give me a way of liberation. Liberate me from what constricts and confines and makes my life not its full. And I suppose what person can go through a life and never, through their life and never ask that question, what is binding me, who is binding me, while shining the light upon themselves, but always outwards. Right? Because there's always somebody to blame. There's always something going on out there that is causing, giving us headaches or worse. Something or someone that's not right, that is wrong, that's making our lives more difficult. Mazumi Roshi, as we're entering into the sort of the celebration time, our 45th anniversary. One of the reasons I wanted to focus on Genjo Koan is because it was something that Dada Roshi dearly loved. It was something he taught us and brought into our training and teachings, and also because it helps to connect with our lineage. It was important to Mazumi Roshi. We're going to use his commentary. And there's a talk by Mazumi Roshi where he says, our life is usually so hectic that we can quite easily lose ourselves. Zazen is a wonderful opportunity to face yourself and closely study yourself. In a way, it's almost a joke to have to find out who we are or to realize what our life is. Our life, this life, it's already in realization. It is already manifesting, so what is there to look for? When we look for something, the Buddha calls this delusion. Unfortunately, this is what all of us do in one way or another. And then he talks about the koan where there's a student who says to his teacher, I want to peck from the inside. Would you please tap from the outside? Mazumi Roshi says, when an egg is ready to hatch, the chick inside peeks at the shell, pecks at the shell, and the mother hen senses it and taps on the outside. When it's time, just a little tap on the outside breaks the shell, and the chick hatches. If the shell breaks too soon or too late, the chick dies. So the student says, please tap from the outside. Then he asks, what is the point of this koan? Roshi says, and he says, I'm ready. Please let me come out. And then he asks, well, where's the shell? Where's the hindrance that keeps you from coming out? What is binding you? He says, there's an expression in Japanese, without a rope, people bind themselves. Rashi says, you yourself do not think you are completely free, so you practice trying to liberate yourself. But what is binding you? Look around you. Nothing is binding you, and yet something is binding you. I'm ready to come out. Please let me come out. And there is a kind of, Dada Roshi talked about this a lot. Tap, tap, peck, peck. And there is that. It is a kind of a description of something that happens in training with a teacher. But the true power, the door that needs to open, is always in the hands of the student. And so how to liberate this sense of being bound, that's what we're doing. We're trying to liberate us from a delusion, right? Not from an actual constriction. Although there is constriction. But what we're trying to free ourselves from is the sense of that constriction, the sense of our delusion, which is just showing us how powerful our mind is to create a sense of something that in essence can't be found, has no essence, and yet sets us seeking and is at the root of all the human suffering. And so the Buddha said, see everything that is impermanent in your eyes, in the objects that your eyes see, in your consciousness that is seeing. When your eyes touch an object, there's a moment of contact, and there's a feeling, a sensation. You like what you see, you don't like what you see, you're indifferent. He said, see that each aspect is impermanent. Why is that important? The Buddha said, when we see that clearly, we become disenchanted. When we realize there's nothing there that's permanent, we become disenchanted. He said, see everything that is dependently arising. When the ears hear and consciousness knows the sound of what is being heard and there is contact and there is feeling, liking, not liking, neutral. The Buddha said, see that in that nothing has any self-existence. Nothing happens on its own. Is separate from seeing, from hearing, from consciousness. And he presents these teachings and really meditations as paths of liberation. That when we see that, we become disenchanted. When we realize there's no self-being, no own being, that we realize that there's no solidity to anything. So what are we grasping at? What is binding us? There's a, in the Theragatha, the collection of poems by nuns at the time of the Buddha, there's one of the nuns, one of the verses is from Sisupachala, who had a daughter, a sister, Chala, and another sister named Upachala. And they were all, the three sisters were all the younger sisters of Shariputra, who was one of the, you know, foremost disciples of the Buddha. We chant his name every morning, the Heart Sutra. So this is some family, right? So they all go to the Buddha and ordain. And the footnote on her says, their parents were not happy. That's going to lead them to also want to go ordain or never want to go anywhere near. So in her poem, she says, the nun filled with virtues, with the ways we know the world, well controlled, attains the state of peace, sublime and sweet. And then Mara, speaking to her, says, yeah, but you know, there are gods in the heavens. And they are creating pleasures unimaginable every day. Turn your mind to those pleasures. Don't you want those pleasures? You used to enjoy them, and these are so much better. And she says, yes, there are still these gods who create their own pleasures. She says, but all of them, day after day, life after life, in whatever body they come into being in, they will never get beyond this. They just turn and turn and turn, and birth and death, coming and going, trying to hold on what they cannot have, and ultimately losing. She said, the whole world is in flames. The whole world is burning. The whole world is blazing. The whole world is shaking. The Buddha taught the Dharma that cannot be shaken. It has no equal and is not known by the untrained. But I have fixed my mind on it. After I heard what the Buddha said, I lived delighting in his teaching. I have seen this with my own eyes. What the Buddha taught is done. What you take, Mara, as pleasures are not for me anymore. The mass of mental darkness that I lived with for so long is split open. Know this, O Mara, you are defeated. You are finished. Defeated as she knows her mind, as she is free of the enchantment of those pleasures. And the Buddha acknowledges in the sutras, he says, yes, they are pleasurable. He doesn't say they're not. He says, no, they are. They are pleasurable. And they're impermanent. And so that pleasure that we derive from them is pleasurable, right? But we can't keep it. And so we will continually be disappointed when we invest in them more than they can give. When we seek from them some lasting, deeper, more ultimate sense of satisfaction or fulfillment, the Dharma that cannot be shaken, every mind-created idea or belief or philosophy or opinion can so easily be shaken. And then what do we have? You know, it's the importance of faith in the Buddhist path that is based in, that is tethered, is dependent upon, is relying upon our practice from within that faith to verify that which we have faith in. That is a crucial aspect of Buddhist practice. I remember years ago, it's a long story, but I knew a wife, the wife of one of the Greenhaven students who's also had been incarcerated for a very long time. And she was deeply religious. She was Christian, deeply religious. Her message on her voicemail, her answer machine back then, was a message of faith. It was a huge part of her life. And through various circumstances, her husband, the student at Greenhaven who had just been released, actually was just to be released, and they had the rest of their lives before them, finally freed. And he died suddenly before he could even leave prison. And I remember calling her and speaking with her afterwards and asking her how she was doing. And of course, she was in immense grief. And I said, is your faith helping you? And she said, what faith? And that's understandable. Right, her whole world has been shaken. And some, perhaps, understanding that with this faith, I will be, I don't know what, in God's grace, that if I live a pious life, then my life will be a mirror of that piety, that I will, gone. at least for the moment. I don't know what happened over time, but for me, it was a really vivid example. I felt heartbroken, really, for her, because I knew how important, what a pillar that was for her. And I said to her, I said, look, I get this, but, you know, I really hope that this is going to change. You know, this will come back. But for me, it was a really it got my attention. Because I thought, as strong and deep and righteous as that faith is, in a way, it can be precarious unless it's bound up, right? It's dependent upon something that I am doing that begins to, in a sense, not just verify, but in a sense, replace that faith with experience. Some way, the faith that I have had, in a way, transforms into experience, which then encourages me to have more faith. Faith isn't something that we don't yet know to be fully true. And so it seems that greed and stinginess, fear, anger, jealousy, indifference, deception are perennial. Right? As long as human beings have been speaking about their world, we hear those record in the we see that in the records, but also perennial is generosity and patience, kindness, moral clarity, commitment, devotion, respect, humility. So Sisa Pachala said, "What you take for pleasures are no longer ultimate pleasures. I am no longer seeking through those pleasures." So it doesn't mean we cannot partake of those pleasures. But in a sense, as practitioners, partake of them knowingly. And the Buddha said this. He said, look, use food for what food is for. Don't try and turn it into something it's not. Don't look for it, from it, to give us something it can't give us. That will only lead to disappointment. The mass of mental darkness is split open. And so in Sesshin, we create this very simple kind of bare landscape. Right. With the precautions and silence and eyes lowered and no entertainment other than what you're coming up with in your own mind. So we're releasing much of those sort of ephemeral, temporary pleasures, right, to create this bare landscape, this naked landscape, to make it easier for what? To see. To make it easier for us to see. And so first, in order to do that, we use that bare landscape to not agitate the mind, right? So that our mind is not going out, and being excited or agitated or upset or by what we're experiencing. There's just not much going on. So that there can be a great deal to see. And in that, as the Buddha said, we can begin to see more closely in a way that is more changing, impermanence, right? I mean, we all know everything is impermanent. That's not that hard to know. Everything is in a constant state of change. Of course, we forget that all the time. We act as though it's not true all the time. But the Buddha said, when we really understand impermanence, that will liberate your mind. So he's talking about understanding impermanence at a deeper level, not just a conceptual understanding. So Mazumi Roshi asked, well, what is binding you? Look around you, he said. Nothing is binding you, and yet something is binding you. Nothing is binding you. You are realizing yourself, manifesting yourself as you are. What is wrong with how you are? What is wrong with how you are, he asks. Then he says, you just can't take it. Take what? Who you are. He said, this is simply because something is obstructing us from seeing this fact, that there is nothing wrong. And we can't, it's hard to take that. There has to be something wrong. If there wasn't something wrong, then why wouldn't I I mean, if there's nothing wrong, then why wouldn't I already be enlightened? Why wouldn't I be at peace? Why wouldn't I be fully embodying the precepts? It's just hard to take. He said, this obstruction, whatever it is, makes us feel as if we are bound by something. The Buddha calls this delusion. In other words, your mind is not in the right place. Your mind is not in the right place. Daojin, right before he dies, said, all things are liberated. You should keep mindful of this and manifest it in the future. All things are already liberated. So he clearly went on to see that not only was he not bound, nothing was binding him, but there was nothing being bound in the whole universe. It said that after he died, which was just after he said this, he was 72, he was entombed on the mountain where he lived, and the next year the door of the crypt where he was entombed opened of itself for no reason. And when they looked in, it looked like he was still alive. And so after that, they never shut the door of the tomb. He was posthumously named the great physician, Zen master. And Keizan in the commentary says, the cultivation of emptiness is called the gate of liberation. Why? Neither sentience nor Buddhahood binds you. What more birth and death could there be to entangle you? This cannot be assessed through body or mind. It cannot be discerned by illusion or enlightenment. Even if you talk about mind or objects or afflictions, enlightenment, all of these are just different names for the self. Therefore, mountains and rivers have no barrier. Subjects and object are not different. And because of this, when it's cold, it chills you thoroughly. When it's hot, it heats you thoroughly. Your sentience, our sentience, our Buddha nature, our Buddha mind does not bind us. Our body, our senses, our experiences, right? Of course, this is hard to take, right? Because it sure as hell seems like something is binding us. When a strong emotion, when something happens and we feel and a strong reaction comes forth, then we get caught in, it gets entrenched, intractable, we suffer, we get sick, we act out. And so he says, nothing is binding you and something is binding you. Both are true. And both are truths within Buddhist teachings, which means both are to be examined deeply. So this means our humanity, our faults, our strengths, our weaknesses, our desires, our non-attachments, our attachments do not bind us. And pain and confusion, sense of constriction, anxiety, fear and worry, they have a reality, right? Buddhism does not deny that. It does not say you are not experiencing that. That when you are sad, you are not sad. Buddhism doesn't teach that. But it asks the question, but what is this sadness? As I am bound by sadness or grief or anger, what is this sadness or grief or anger? And so, to look closely, and so Sengsan says, well, who is it that is binding you? And Daojin says, no one is binding you. Maybe he answered that right in the moment. He knew already. Maybe he had to go away for a while and examine and look at deeply within himself and ask that question. Maybe he had never had that question presented to himself. So he wanted to know. And he came back and he said, no one is binding me. Then why seek liberation? So what did he realize in that moment? Keizan said, when you cross this barrier, it's not a principle of either or. That is to say, there's neither bondage nor liberation. There's not this nor that. Things do not set up names. Things do not set up their own forms. Therefore, deliberate cultivation comes to an end. In other words, we stop creating worlds within worlds and taking them as existing by themselves. So then the Bodhisattva of compassion now goes about creating worlds. We're in one right now. For the purpose, but knowingly, as a skillful means. When mind is empty, pure knowledge has no right or wrong. When mind is empty, he says, here, I don't know what there is to bind or free. Where is this here? When all mental activity comes to rest, when there's no sense of bondage or release. That's why the Buddha said, when you're sitting, don't sit and think, I am sitting, I am holding on, I am letting go. In other words, don't keep imposing, injecting a created sense of self into a moment that does not have one and does not need one. Being free of that sense of self. Now, what is binding? No. There's an interesting sutra where the Buddha talks about the six senses, and he likens them to animals. So there's a snake and a alligator and a bird and a dog and a jackal and a monkey. He's just drawing from his neighborhood. Right? And he says, so you take a rope and you tie the rope around each one of these. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. And then you take the ends of those six ropes and you tie them into a knot. So now each of those animals is tethered to each other. And he said they are going to pull and pull and pull and pull because each one wants to go to its domain. The alligator wants to go into the water. The bird wants to fly. Right? The monkey wants to go up in the trees. Snake wants to go into the grasses. So they're all fighting to go to their place where they belong, where they gravitate, where they dwell. And he said, eventually they'll tire themselves out and the one that's most powerful will dominate all the others. Interesting. And pull the others along. So to think of that, which sense, right, finally wins out, you know, and it tethers all the others coming along. He said, now if you take the same animals, tie them, but now you tie the ends of each of those ropes to just one stake. They pull just like they did before, but they're not pulling against each other. They're pulling against the stake. And the stake is holding them equally. And the stake isn't fighting them back. When they're tethered to each other, they're fighting against each other. The stake isn't fighting anybody. And finally, they get exhausted. And what do living things do when they get exhausted? They lay down and rest. He said, that stake is mindfulness. That's what holds us. That's what, in a sense, binds, in a positive way, us to this moment, freely. And the difference between the bondage that Daojin is talking about is that is not given freely. Right? That is a sense of something that is happening to me, even though I am doing it. It is born out of a lack of mindfulness. And so it's interesting that just to use that as a way of thinking about, right? The role of mindfulness and holding, right? Keeping us from just flying away. And that when finally we exhaust ourselves, well, part of sesshin is to get you exhausted. It's pretty effective, wouldn't you say? But exhausted in a good way, not worn out, you know, mentally, emotionally, but exhausted of our efforts to continually pull and try and get away from that stake. And so when we're practicing mindfulness, we move towards it, right? The rope goes slack. But then we get distracted, we get excited, so we pull and it yanks at us. That's our vow. That's our intention. Kazon says, even if you distinguish the elements of body and mind, seeing, hearing, sound, and form are not another. Seeing is seeing, hearing is hearing. Each complete within itself. Each by itself, free. The eyes do not bind. The object does not bind. And so Kazon says, you actually have a light called vision of the world. You have a sense of taste called blending, six flavors. Therefore, you emanate this light everywhere and prepare a feast everywhere. As you savor it, you find rich flavor where there's ultimately no flavor. As you observe it, you find true form where ultimately it's empty of form. Thus, there are no rules, rulers or politicians that you need to approach. There's no physical or mental sitting or reclining that is going to give it to you. It's all here. The feast is prepared. The table is set. And so we open the eyes, we open the ears, the tongue, the nose, skin, mind. And then in the moment where it seems like something, we ask, where is the hindrance? What is it that's binding me? And realize nothing is wrong with you. You can take it, and your mind is in exactly the right place.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.